Welcome to Money Talk with MFLN Personal Finance. This podcast series offers brief recaps of our recent online professional development webinars targeted at personal finance managers and extension educators who work with military service members. I'm Molly Herndon, Program Coordinator for the Personal Finance Team, and I'm joined by Money Talk herself, Dr. Barbara O'Neill. Dr. O'Neill is a distinguished professor in the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences at Rutgers University and is the Rutgers Cooperative Extension Specialist in Financial Resource Management. In this episode, Dr. Barbara O'Neill and I talk about her July 2019 webinar, Insurance Principles and Resources, What Financial Educators Need to Know. This webinar covered types of insurance ranging from auto to long-term care. Watch the recording and find associated resources from the event at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org/22064. All right, insurance principles and resources. You began the webinar by discussing five ways to manage risk. Can you describe them and give examples?
Sure, Molly. So basically, when you think about the risk that people have in their lives that can cause financial losses, there's five things that you can do to help manage or at least mitigate these risks. And I guess the first one is doing nothing, which is kind of the default option for people. But if you do nothing, people kind of say, well, I'll hope for the best. And that you mean, I hope there's no accidents. I hope nobody gets ill. Nobody gets disabled. My house doesn't have any losses. I don't get sued by anybody. So obviously, all of those things aren't within our control. So it's kind of a risky strategy. But it is something that people do. Do nothing and hope for the best. Number two is just to avoid risks. So an example would be not driving in bad weather, like a snowstorm, let's say, or just electing not to do things that by their very nature tend to be risky and cause accidents, you know, and that could be skiing, skydiving, bungee jumping, and anything like that that could cause extra risks. Number three is to reduce the risk that we face. So some examples there would be having an alarm system at your house to reduce the risk of theft, wearing seat belts in your car, and even things like, you know, physical activity and eating healthy food to hopefully reduce any health risks. And then we've got number four, which is accepting risks. So that's kind of saying to yourself, well, okay, I'm going to have to pay for some of this risk myself. And typically the way we do that is with the deductibles on our insurance policies. So you might choose $250, $500, $750, whatever amount you want to be kind of accepting on your own. And then the last way that people handle risks is to transfer them. So if you have a very large out-of-pocket loss, like if you were sued for $500,000 or your house burned down or somebody got cancer or something like that, very large out-of-pocket losses, then you transfer those risks to a third party, namely an insurance company. And of course, you pay a premium to transfer.
Okay. What are some common insurance errors that you described in the webinar?
Well, there's a bunch of them. I think the first one that I mentioned in the webinar was not following the large loss principle. And by that, I mean purchasing adequate insurance for the large potential financial losses. So some examples there would be disability if you're unable to earn an income, liability if somebody sues you, and then of course catastrophic medical losses would be in that category too. A second error is not being familiar with the specifics of your insurance plan. And that could be any plan. It could be through a private company, you know, maybe your auto insurance policy. It could be through your employer. For example, many people get health insurance through a workplace plan, or it could even be through a government facilitated policy. So something like Medicare for people who are in that age category, or people who have healthcare.gov, you know, marketplace insurance, just not being familiar with what these policies cover. A third error is not having disability insurance to cover the loss of income that can result from an accident or an illness. And it's just one of those areas where many people just don't get coverage and are leaving themselves exposed, particularly if you're self-employed, if you don't have an employer that pays sick days and would give some partial payment if you were out of work. It's really critical to have disability insurance. A fourth error is not checking on the credit rating of insurance companies. So you should do that before you buy a policy, just to make sure that the rating companies have determined that the insurance company that you're relying on is financially sound. And then a final error that I talked about is just not following what I call the rule of three. In other words, shopping around, comparing three competing insurance policies. And it is time intensive. I did that myself just recently, with a move to Florida from New Jersey and having to get new coverage for a home here in Florida. And it takes time. And it's not only just cost that you're going to be looking at, but also the amount of service that you would get, whether there's somebody local that you can deal with for service, or do you have to, you know, deal with everybody online or through telephone. So it's finding the best combination of characteristics about an insurance company that you want to choose for yourself to provide your coverage.
Okay. So what are some key factors that affect the cost of auto insurance?
Well, for your auto insurance, there's a lot of key factors. First, we'll start with the car itself, the vehicle. So, you know, what is the make? What is the model? What is the age of the car? So obviously a brand new car is going to cost more to insure than a car that's, you know, maybe 8 or 10 years old. So the age of the car, and also the theft rate statistics. So that is going to, again, depend on the type of car. Some cars are stolen more frequently than others, either for the car themselves or for the various components and parts of the car. So those things will affect your premium. The second thing will be what they call the rating territory. So that's the area where the car is being housed. So some things that the insurance companies will look for would be the accident rates and the theft and vandalism rates for the location where the car is located. So for example, if it's in a densely populated urban area, you're likely to pay more than if it's in a sparsely populated rural area, you know, all other things being equal. So they'll look at the rating territory. So we got the vehicle, the rating territory. The third thing they'll look at is the driver. So some factors there will be the age of the driver, the gender. Young males tend to pay some of the highest insurance premiums, and all of things being equal. Marital status, driving record, and in some states they'll look at a credit score as well, because apparently there's some research that indicates a positive association between a higher credit score and lower accident rates, whether it speaks to conscientiousness or responsibility or whatever. So they'll look at all those personal factors about the driver or drivers, you know, because sometimes people will add, you know, like children, you know, teenage drivers, for example, to the policy, which will obviously raise the rates. Then another big thing that affects your auto insurance will be the amount of liability coverage. So the state minimums are usually very low, and that has to do with the fact that, you know, the states, I think, are hesitant to raise them to what would be an adequate amount, simply because it's going to cost people more, and then you're likely to have more uninsured motorists driving around if the premiums get too high. So the state minimums tend to be pretty low, but as a driver, what I suggested is having something much higher, you know, something on the order of 100, 350, or even people these days are getting 250, 500, 100. So that the first number would be damages to any one person. The second number would be for everyone involved in an accident, in a claim. And then the third number would be for property damage limits. So obviously the higher the limits, the more you'll be paying as a premium because you're getting more coverage from your policy. And then the last thing that can affect the cost of auto insurance would be discounts of various sorts. So you can get discounts for being over 65, driving short distances, bundling your auto insurance with other types of property insurance, typically a homeowner's or renter's policy. If you have some type of security devices that, you know, like an alarm system on your car that might prevent some thefts, that would be something that would be taken into consideration. And of course, your driving record. So again, just to summarize, it has to do with the type of car, where the car is housed, the driver, the amount of coverage, and then the discounts that can apply to reduce the cost of coverage.
The research about the credit score and driving conscientiousness is interesting. I had never heard of that before. What are some key factors that affect the cost of homeowners insurance?
Well, just like the auto insurance, a key factor will be the amount of policy coverage. So whether you're getting, you know, $100,000 of coverage, $500,000, typically what you'll want to do is work with your property insurance agent. And maybe even in my case, I was building a home, so I dealt with the builder as well. You'll need to get a number for what is the value of your house, excluding the land. I mean, you'll always get to keep your land, even if your house burns down to the ground. You'll still have the land that it was built on. So you need to get a number for the house itself to rebuild that house if necessary. So that number will be key, obviously, because that's the amount of coverage that you're going to have on your home. And then the location of the home will also factor in. So again, whether it's rural versus urban, where it tends to be located, there are certain states that have higher risk for earthquakes. We have others that have higher risks for sinkholes. So having just bought a house in Florida, I got sinkhole coverage for the first time. Didn't have to have that back in New Jersey. Some people have flooding risks. So you're going to need to get coverage for flooding, which would entail special type of flood insurance policy. So the location is key. Type of structure also is key. So whether it's a home that's made from bricks or wood, the size of the home, you know, are we talking 4,000 square feet versus 1,000 square feet? The layout, is it two-story versus one-story? And then also you'll have coverage for other structures. So it could be a freestanding garage, or what we're seeing frequently on ads now are the she sheds and the man caves and, you know, those other structures that might be on the property that are freestanding apart from the house, but they're still part of your homeowner's policy. And then you'll have policy replacement coverage features. So whether your home and your property are insured for their actual cash value versus replacement costs. So if you had replacement cost coverage, and let's say, a piece of furniture was stolen, let's say, if you had replacement costs, you would have coverage to go out and buy that piece of furniture at its current cost, where it was actual cash value. Maybe that piece of furniture was 10 years old. You would just get a very small fraction of its value because of depreciation. And then like the car insurance, there might also be policy discounts that you would qualify for. So things like an alarm system at your home, having various types of detectors like smoke detectors, and also bundling your homeowner's insurance with other types of property coverage, particularly an auto policy. And then another type of difference that you'll see is just differences in company pricing. And you'll see this with car insurance too. It's, you know, whether you're going to be dealing with brick and mortar offices that you can actually go to a place and see somebody face to face to help your insurance needs, whether it's going to be primarily online with insurance questions and support services. So those different pricing differences among companies can also factor in as well.
We'll be right back. We hope you're making plans to join our virtual conference September 17th through 19th. Relationships for Readiness invites military service providers and educators to begin rethinking their work with military families by realigning themselves as connected and collaborative professionals, organizations, and agencies. In this conference, Department of Defense representatives will discuss the family readiness system as a function of collaboration across boundaries, whether those boundaries are office doors, installations, communities, organizations, or agencies. RSVP and learn more at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org/VC2019. Back to the show. You mentioned a study where few people understood basic health insurance terms. What are they?
Well, this is an interesting study that was done a few years ago, and they had these four basic insurance terms, and only 14% of a pretty large sample were able to correctly identify the four basic insurance terms, and only 11% could actually correctly calculate the cost of a hospitalization by applying the four terms correctly. So these are terms related to health insurance, but some of them apply to other types of insurance as well. So the first one is deductible, and that's the specific dollar amount that you have to pay for a claim before any of your insurance benefits kick in. People might have like a $500 annual deductible, for example. And then copayment is a flat dollar amount that a person must pay when they have some kind of health care related product. So, for example, a prescription. Or it could be for a service too, like a doctor's office visit. So your plan might say you have to pay $10, $15, $25 copayment. The third term is coinsurance, and that's the percentage of the total cost of medical services that the participant in the plan has to pay. So, for example, the plan participant might have to pay 20%, and then the insurance company will pay 80%. And then the final term was out-of-pocket maximum, and that's the maximum amount of expenses that the healthcare plan participants must pay themselves, you know, as part of that coinsurance split arrangement, and they have to pay that out-of-pocket before the medical expenses are covered 100%. So very often your out-of-pocket maximums are, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, even $10,000, depending on the plan. So how it works and how so many people got the question wrong in the survey is that you'll apply your deductible first and pay that out-of-pocket. And then of the amount that's remaining, you would pay your coinsurance up until the out-of-pocket maximum. So let's say you had a $1,000 deductible, you paid $1,000, and then let's say you had 20% coinsurance, you would pay 20% of the remainder. And if you got up to the out-of-pocket maximum, which could be $5,000 or more, let's say, then once you reach that, then the insurance would pay the 100%. Otherwise, you're on the hook for 20% of the amount. The copayment is not really factored into that math because typically copayments are paid at the point of purchase. So when you're standing in line at the drugstore or you're doctor's office. That's when you pay co-payments. The deductibles and the co-insurance and the out-of-pocket maximums, they usually will be seen by people on an itemized bill. So you'll get a bill from the healthcare provider and it will show all of those numbers.
Okay, thank you for your comments on the insurance webinar. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care, Molly.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening today. You can find this recording and archived episodes of the Money Talk podcast, as well as an upcoming calendar of professional development events, blog posts targeted at military service providers, and more on our website at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org.